Well, hello and welcome to Book Talk for this April 16th, 2024.
Recording in progress.
This should be the week that Nolan returns from his conference and we'll all be back to normal. We have producer Perry here and Jenny is here and we've got folks raising their hands already, but we'll get to you in just one moment. Also, if you can't use Zoom for any reason, you're not a Zoom user, you want to call in, you can call 317-886-1103. If it asks you to unmute, do the *6 on your phone. That's 317-886-1103 and do *6 to unmute yourself. Okay. Jenny, I know you're here. I'm not sure about Nolan.
Nolan is not here yet.
Not here yet, so we'll send it over to Jennifer and see what's going on.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Book Talk. Pardon my croaky voice. I was hoping Nolan would be here and all of you can talk and help me out today. One thing I was interested in to see what people thought about is your summer reading list. Are there certain things that you enjoy reading more in the spring and summer? Are there good baseball books or something like that that you've read that you might want to talk about? A long time ago, I read one, I think, when I was in high school, about this high school team. They were a bunch of misfits, and they ended up learning to play together and winning the minor league playoff game, and that was kind of fun. But I know, Perry, you've probably read some.
I have definitely read some good baseball books. Let me hit the button. There we hit Nolan's button to get him
in.
Yeah,
I got him in on the way. Let me.
What are some of them you've read?
Right off the top of my head, I don't remember, but I will look back in my files. I guess my wife read a book called Haunted Baseball. Oh, there's two of them, she said. So she's read those two, but there's a book, and I'm not sure the exact title of it, but it's about broadcasters in baseball. Kurt Smith is the author, and that is a good one.
Just a second here. I need to reset and get Nolan in or get
I'm sure that
there, I had sent Nolan the unmute request, so he should be able to come in and talk to us now.
I believe we're working.
Yeah, good. It is.
How's everybody?
How are you?
We're here. We're watching the weather in the central part of the country today.
I imagine so, yeah.
We've had tornado warning since they started about 11 o'clock this morning, and they're still going.
Yeah, that's grim. I'm about to read a book, and I'll review it in a couple of weeks here on this program. It's called The Tornado, Nature's Ultimate Windstorm, by somebody named Brazilus, P.T. Brazilus. It should be an interesting book. There's my good friend, longtime school friend of mine, and he's coming in.
I finished. I don't remember if I talked about it last week, but I finished. It was called All By Myself Alone, and it was by Mary Higgins Clark. And
oh my, yes, I saw your review on that.
And that was quite the book. The they all go on this cruise ship that is supposed to be. They wanted to make it, the owner wanted to make it as luxurious as the Titanic, mm-hmm. but it was smaller. It was only designed to carry 100 passengers.
Wow.
So there were a lot of famous people that went on it. And this group of people that went, there was she was an English royal person, Lady Emily Hayward. She went with all of her precious jewels, and she took her financial assistant and his wife and another and her old companion that she'd had for 20 years. And then there was a gemologist and a retired professor. And of course, there was, this was part of the lottery winner series that Mary Higgins Hart Clark did with Alvira and Willie Meehan. And so they were there. And all these people are after this Lady Haywood's jewelry. And it goes throughout the book, these 5 days of their trip, the things that these people do to try to get these jewels, and who's trying to protect them. And it was really good. And then there's the owner, who doesn't want any bad publicity at all to come out. And he wants to know when someone even falls overboard, and he doesn't want to stop and get them, because he doesn't want to waste the time. And he wants to make sure that they all get where they're going on time, because they have people scheduled to go there and be picked up. And it was really good.
Cool. Very good. Last week went okay, I guess.
Yeah, we had an interesting discussion last week. We were talking about good biographies and autobiographies that people read.
Excellent. Sorry, I missed that. All right. What's next?
I bet you have a review.
Oh, I'm loaded. I am neck deep in stuff for you, man. I mean,
that's a good thing.
I start preparing for this program. The minute the old one ends, that is not an exaggeration. I'm like the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade Committee, man. The minute the last balloon is deflated, I'm gearing up for next year. I want to talk to you about The Road to Roswell by Connie Willis. In the spirit of full disclosure, I've never read a bad Connie Willis story or book. She is someone whom I am very biased in favor of. I like her writing style. You know, there are people who won't, and I respect that, but boy, she just really brings things home for me. The Road to Roswell is a fun, humorous piece of science fiction and lightheartedness and a road trip saga that if you read, you'll never forget it. Just a lot of fun. This is the story of Francie, who is a maid of honor at a wedding that's happening in Roswell, New Mexico. The wedding is happening during the same weekend as a UFO festival, which is also coinciding with July 4th. So the town is busy. It's booked. The only place they can hold the wedding is inside the UFO Museum. Francie has come there to talk her friend out of marrying this UFO devotee. It's Francie's conviction that he's not necessarily good for her friend. However, as it goes, before she can talk her out of it, the friend says, "Please, can you go out to my car and get some lights? I have some lights in the back seat that we're going to use to decorate this museum with." And so, grabbing the keys, Francie runs out to her friend's automobile, pops it open. Inside, lying on the floor of the vehicle, is something that looks like a tumbleweed. Francie, assuming that somehow it blew in with a window down or who knows how it got there, simply reaches down in an attempt to fling it to the parking lot. And instead, a tentacle of this tumbleweed reaches out and grasps her arm. Oh, goodness. Now what? It convinces her. It manages to communicate with her by pointing itself in various directions and things. It convinces Francie to drive and to drive away from the parking lot wherein she's come to look for those wedding lights. And thus begins an incredible saga, a road trip that you won't forget if you dive into this. The profanity is not too terrible. There's occasional pieces of it, but it's fairly minimal. Along the way, they stop and pick up a hitchhiker. The young man is a con man, but very lovable. He's selling alien abduction insurance policies to those who visit Roswell during that weekend. And that's his goal, to sell as many of these as he can, of course. Yeah. They also pick up another young man who is convinced that there's an alien around every corner and that those aliens are eager to probe him in various and unhelpful places. They eventually... I'm really condensing this, but they eventually come together with a sweet old woman who plays the casinos a lot in New Mexico. She's well known to the casino ownership, There's an old gentleman there who owns an RV that Francie eventually co-ops because there's now too many people to fit in her roommate's little car. And it's not just an RV, it's a trail wagon. And inside the RV, he has every old Western that's ever been made. So he can talk to you at great length about places like Kanab, Utah, which the narrator grossly mispronounces, much to my chagrin. And Monument Valley, which is a scenic portion of southeastern Utah where a lot of these films are made. The old Westerns were made, rather. If you have any even casual knowledge of old John Wayne or John Ford directed Westerns, this book will even mean more to you. I think it strikes me that Connie Willis must have a pretty decent knowledge of those old movies because she references them in this book. It's great fun. The end is not something you'll see coming, and it does have a very satisfactory ending. This is called The Road to Roswell by Connie Willis, conventionally spelled DB116879, if you're in a position to borrow books from the National Library Service for the Blind and Print Disabled. Again, The Road to Roswell, DB116879.
That sounds like a good book.
It's fun. It really is. No hard science in this at all. It's just good science fiction, good fun.
Well, here come the hands. We have Carl will be first, and then Jane will be after Carl. So Carl, excellent, go right ahead, and then Jane, you're next.
You got to unmute.
Okay, we'll try. We'll come back to Carl in a second. We'll see if Jane can do the unmuting.
But before we go to her, please, can I just point out respectfully, folks,
yep,
you're not updating your Zoom client on a regular basis. You really, 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 really got to do those updates because it can create some real problems with this this meeting is being recorded window, and that won't let you unmute unless you acknowledge that window. So. Anyway, go ahead.
Hey there, all of you. So the old lady on the road to Roswell, she reminded me of a lady in a lot of books a long time ago, and I cannot remember her name, but she had a hat and she'd play cards and she saw all kinds of books. Who was that?
Yeah, I don't remember.
I know, but they had that earthy, humorous, wacky way of being. I loved it. So
yes,
I validate that book. And if I remember the old lady's name,
I can't remember the name of the woman in the book either. I didn't listen.
I know. But she sure had it in spades, if you can safely say that these days. She was very fun and believable, and I wanted to be her when I, started solving world problems. The book I want to, is it Perry? Is that you? You mentioned baseball, and 100 mm-hmm. billion years ago, when one of our children, who is now 48, was in about fourth grade, you wrote about 5 million book reports on a book called Baseball Fever. I go, don't your teachers pay attention to how many times you submit the same report? So I don't have any other baseball books in mind. If I could write one, I'd write one about the seventh inning. It would be the most fun of all, anyway, what people do. The book I want to recommend, though, I wasn't here last week, couldn't be, is a remarkable memoir biography called Reaching for the Stars.
Interesting.
It's about a migrant worker, a Mexican-American. Every day, he and his father and his brothers, there were five children in the family, would go picking wherever they were picking. And the father and the mother, people have often said, get an education, that's the key to success. But education, you can't get an education unless you learn how to learn, and that you have ways of reaching out that you can trust. And in this book, this child was given fabulous ways to believe in his own dreams. Every day they would start work before the sun came up, and every day this child would look up and say, I want to reach the stars. And he became the first Spanish speaking Mexican American to become an astronaut. And the story of the love that his family shared was unvarnished and full. And it's a very good memoir to read. So it's called Reaching for the Stars.
Very cool. I've never heard of this guy. Thank you.
It's on Bard.
Yeah.
The other thing that mattered to me was that he talked a lot about the fact you can have a dream, but you have to work for it. And every day at the end of the day, his father would say to his children, look at your hands, look at the dirt on your hands. That is what you're going to do as an adult if you don't find a dream and start reaching for it now. What a father. What a fabulous father. So anyway, I recommend the book with a whole heart.
Very cool. This is called Reaching for the Stars.
Yes.
The inspiring story of a migrant farm worker turned astronaut.
Just incredible.
Yeah, what a story. And the order number, should you be eligible to download this, is DB116999. Yeah, that's really well done.
Please read it. Please. And the actual reader isn't the author, but he does a great job of pronouncing the Spanish words. Take it from me who's not Spanish.
That sounds great. Thank you.
Yes. Anyway, that's it. Okay.
You know, that's a great review. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, Carl, we'll try once more. There, I think there's something you have to hit to get the, like, I know on the computer, I think it's F6, but I'm not.
That's one potential if you're using an old version of Zoom. The other potential is to do an Alt F10 and use your JAWS window list and force that window to be exposed that way. And at that point, you tab to OK, and then you can unmute, and life is good. So.
Okay. Well, Carl is still muted, so we will I'll let you guys.
I just gave him a master unmute. I don't know if that'll work or not. Sometimes it does.
He is a longtime friend of mine. We go back to when I was a child, at least. He's, a day or two older than me. I'm sorry we can't hear from him because he always, his contributions are always uplifting and useful and meaningful. And so, I'm hopeful that he's able to get that solved at some point because it would add to the value of what we're doing here. I'm positive. So, in the meantime, can we move forward or do we want to give him another couple seconds? I don't know what to do.
Wait a minute. Oh, maybe he got it.
Hey, did he get it or leave the meeting? Which was that? I didn't see the. I just saw his name.
Nope, he's still muted.
Okay. Okay, well, let's do another. Jenny, are you next? Do you want me to carry on, or what's your
list? No, you can go.
I want to talk to you about The Heart of a Killer. This is a great book. This is not part of the Andy Carpenter universe, but it's written by the same author. This is The Heart of a Killer by David Rosenfelt, Rosenfelt. If you're eligible to borrow books from the National Library Service, your order number is DB74334. Once again, DB74334. Here's the setup real quick. The teenage girl named Karen will die if she doesn't get a heart transplant. It's as simple as that. The only person whose ticker in any way matches the one young Karen needs is her mom. Years earlier, Karen's mom allegedly stabbed to death an abusive husband and went to prison for it. Jamie Wagner is an attorney. He's not particularly ambitious. That's the only reminder you get of Andy Carpenter here. But Jamie agrees to take the mother's case to see whether, in fact, she really did kill the husband, as she claims all these years ago that she did. The truth is that she was framed for that, but she took the blame so that Karen would in no way be endangered by her not doing that. They basically told her the girl lives if you take the blame for this. If you don't, she dies. So now we have an issue, however, where young Karen desperately needs a heart transplant. Mom is the only one who has a ticker that will match. And Mom says if she gets out of prison, she will commit suicide. And she will take her life and make sure that young Karen has a ticker that's going to work. The parole board says, gosh, we'd love to get you out of here. Jamie Wagner proves that, in fact, she was framed for that murder. So I'm condensing the story immensely, but you need to read it anyway, so why would I tell you everything? And yet the parole board says, look, we don't want to parole you because we know you will engage in a criminal act. And it's our job not to parole people who go out and then engage in a criminal act. And so you need to read this to see how it turns out. It's a great story. It's just really well written. I blew through it on a Friday night, and it was a glorious Friday night. It beat anything else I could have done. I worried a little about this plot. Is really Mom the only one who has a ticker that is good enough that's going to match Karen's immune system? I mean, are there no other family members? I guess that can happen, sure enough. Not big on experts on organ donations, so I'm going to let that stand. But it was a wonderful book, a lot of fun. You'll enjoy the way it comes out. It's very much a standalone, as I said. So if you're wondering about whether to get into the Andy Carpenter universe, give this particular book a try. It will give you a sample of Rosenfeld's writing style and so on, and you'll be able to see whether you agree with it. Again, that is Heart of a Killer, not the. There's no the in front of it. It's Heart of a Killer by David Rosenfeld, DB74334.
Let's bring on Gil. I'm sure he's on the phone, so he should be able to unmute real quick.
Yeah, I'm here.
There we go.
Hello, everyone. I wanted to jump in here today and talk about a book, kind of an unusual book that I read recently. It's called The Honeymoon Crashers, and it's by Christina Lauren, and I don't think that NLS designated it as an audio original, but in the audio itself, it's called an audio original, and it is very unusual because it is obviously was written to be an audio book and has many narrators that are basically acting out different parts or reading different parts from different characters. And it was very enjoyable, in my opinion. I like books that, you know, you can tell what character is speaking during the dialogue. And certainly with the various narrators, that was possible. And it's a great story that the woman wants to help her sister with her wedding. Her sister and the sister's fiance want to run off to Hawaii and get married, and they don't necessarily want to deal with a big wedding and having all the family there and all that, but the sister wants to make that happen for her sister because, you know, when she had her wedding, all the guests got ill from tainted food, and so her wedding was not very good, which happens in a different book. It's kind of a prequel, I guess, to this book, and so she's the anal retentive type person. She's lists and details and goes about trying to plan this wedding and fly in all the family to Hawaii to attend this wedding, and then of course someone recommends a a man to help her out, and she doesn't want his help and all that, but he pushes his way in, and of course they become a couple. But anyway, they and then of course everything goes wrong too for the wedding. So it's an interesting story.
This is a writing duo, is it not?
Yes, it is. It is.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
Christina Hobbs and Lauren Billings.
Yeah. Okay.
Are the
very
two
cool
authors. And but it was just such an unusual book that.
Oh, bad. Yeah.
that I hadn't heard anything quite like it in the romance area, on Bard. So it was written definitely for an audio book. So it was very entertaining.
Cool, that's great to hear.
Just under 5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
The prequel is called The Unhoneymooners. And I can get the Unhoneymooners is DB 95 3 304.
Okay.
And I think I've got the DB number here for the Honeymoon Crashers. Yes, DB 116 577.
That sounds like a fun book.
It was. It is.
All right.
And we do not have any other hands. So
whose turn is it?
Right ahead.
Well, I prefer something to silence, so I guess I'll chime in here. If you enjoy courtroom drama, and I didn't look at the participant list to see if my friend Deb down in Kentucky is on here. I know she's a courtroom drama fan. And if you enjoy a little mystery and some suspense in your books, might I respectfully recommend Motion to Suppress, Nina Riley, number one. That's not actually part of the title. That's what I add in here to let you know where this book stands in that series. It's called Motion to Suppress. The author is Perry O'Shaughnessy. Let me spell that. Those of you who are taking notes, if you are, P-E-R-R-I, O apostrophe, capital S-H-A-U-G-H-N-E-S-S-Y, Perry O'Shaughnessy. This is a mother, not a mother-daughter, sorry. This is a sister, two sisters duo who are writing this, who wrote this series. The order number is DB52073. Here's the quick setup. Nina Riley has abandoned a marriage and a law career in San Francisco and gone to Lake Tahoe to hopefully set up a new career and a new business and a new life down there. She has her little son with her. Her husband came home and caught Nina very reluctantly in the clutches of a plumber. He saw more there than he wanted, than he was real, actually. And so he instituted divorce procedures. The truth of the matter is he was just as happy to get out from under that marriage as she was, or more. In any event, she's out now in Lake Tahoe on the California side trying to set up a new law office as she runs ads for various employees, and it's going to cut into her savings. She gave up a really good career in corporate law in San Francisco. As she runs ads, a woman walks in who is as wide as she is tall, and announces herself as the heir apparent to the legal secretary job for Nina, or for Nina Riley. The woman is Sandy Whitefeather. You'll see a lot of her in the series. She's actually a remarkable organizer and gets Nina off to a good start. Here's the story, though. Sorry, I've lost my place. She gets a high profile case when a young woman walks in and asks for help with a divorce. It looks like a normal family law kind of thing, not very impressive. However, it becomes pretty high profile when the same young woman is going to need help defending herself in a murder trial. Nina has done some criminal law, some mostly appellate work, but this is a big moment for her. And so the promiscuous young woman can't remember whether she killed the guy, which makes things even more difficult. And so they bring in a hypnotist, and that creates a whole new set of problems. My point is, this is both an outstanding mystery and some rock solid courtroom drama. A lot of fun. It's a good balance between those two elements, and it really captivated me. I stayed with it. This gets 5 stars from me on Goodreads. I can't wait to start book 2 in the series in a few weeks. Again, this is Motion to Suppress by Perry O'Shaughnessy, DB52073.
Well, that sounds like a good one, too.
It really is.
I have just started reading a book by Elizabeth Haynes. It's on the second book that he wrote, I think. It's called The Dark Tide. And I'm not real far into it, but so far she was a dancer, and she decides to leave the London dance scene and go live on a boat. And she's living on this boat, and I'm at the part now where she's getting ready to have a party at like a housewarming on her boat that she's been fixing up, and she's invited her London friends and some of her new friends she's made on the boat. And according to the book jacket information, she's supposed to find a body along someplace by the boat that brings up things from her past, because she hasn't told all the new people she's met that she was this dancer. And so it sounds like she's going to have to deal with all those things. And she's a pretty good writer, I think, so far.
Cool. That's excellent. You're still working your way through it, right?
I'm working my way through it. I've been reading it on my e-reader.
Nice. Very nice. Yeah.
And I'm also reading, I started reading It Ends With Us.
Oh, yeah. Colleen Hoover.
Colleen Hoover. Yeah. This is the first book I've ever read of hers. And so far, it's pretty good, too.
I'm glad you like it. I find her stuff kind of edgy for me. I don't know why I think that, so I'll be glad to know what you think when you finish it.
I kind of agree.
She's just a little, I don't know how to describe it. It's just kind of
out there on the edge.
Yeah, kind of sleazy, trampy, edgy. I don't know. Maybe that's not fair, but I don't know.
A lot of people enjoy those books, though.
I know they do. You're right. I'm in a very real minority. I'll be interested to see how that
goes. Do you like Kristen Higgins?
Yeah, some of her stuff's okay. I haven't read romance in a long time. If I can help it, I avoid them. But Gil has gotten me convinced I need to start doing a little more of that.
There's some pretty good romance writers. I'm not.
He's done a good job helping me. I'm not a big romance fan,
but there's a lot of writers that don't just write bodice rippers.
Absolutely, yeah.
That actually have a plot and
have some meaning. Yeah,
worth reading.
Yeah, that's good. Any hands up?
We do not have any hands.
All right, guys. You'll remember I said back at the beginning of the new year that I was, by gosh, going to read more nonfiction or else this year. In keeping with that goal, I'm excited to recommend to you Paul Harvey's America, The Life, Art, and Faith of a Man Who Transformed Radio and Inspired a Nation.
That was a good book.
It is an outstanding book. It's by Stephen Mansfield. Stephen is spelled with a PH, STEPHEN. Stephen Mansfield and David A. Holland with 2 L's. The order number, should you decide to download this from the National Library Service, is DB72283. Not much I can say about this. Everybody in this call and whoever downloads the podcast is already hearing in their head, "Good morning, Americans. Stand by for news." and that's not a good imitation of it at all, because he was just the master. But you grew up, most of us over a certain age grew up influenced by this guy and his work and his writing. You'll learn about his real name in this book. I didn't know he wasn't really Paul Harvey. That fascinated me. His lifelong romance with Angel, who's also had a different name in reality, 68-year marriage on their way to forever together, as Paul Harvey used to say. He's just, this is a story of a remarkable individual. It's frankly a rather shallow biography. It's one I would give to a young person who wanted to know more about the guy, who maybe had to do a book report about the life of, or not a book report, but a report of some kind about the life of a Paul Harvey-like character. What's fascinating about this is you see the evolution that he makes over the years, his strong anti-communist opinions expressed back in the 50s. He spoke out against the moral degradation and decay of the United States as he saw it back in the 60s and 70s. He and Reagan were close friends, apparently. Not so close that Harvey couldn't disagree and say so on the air, but they were apparently pretty tight in their day. If you were born prior to 1989, you remember the style of this guy who was in your radio 6 days a week. Like I said before, the only weakness I found is a kind of shallowness. I would like to have had a lot more data than we got. This is again a book that even a fairly young person could grab and read. There probably are more exhaustive biographies about the man out there. I'm not suggesting this is inaccurate. It just feels like it glides a surface rather than going too deep. I would like to have seen a few more of his essays in the book, for example. He did a great one about What Are Fathers Made Of that always touches my heart every time I hear it. He did one on the American farmer that even as recently as a Donald Trump campaign ad years ago got used, pieces of it got used as part of that ad. And, there's so many of his essays that didn't get transcribed here. There are a couple in the book. This felt like to me a slap happy deal with a publisher to hurry and get this out there to frankly capitalize on his death. It was published just a couple of months after he died. In 2009, that's probably not fair and not accurate, but that's how it felt. Still, don't let it stop you from reading it. Good stuff. Jack Fox does a magnificent job, and he would do that because he's done radio and he's done news and he's done television. And he doesn't try to mimic Paul Harvey to the degree that you get disgusted by his mimicry and say, "Hey, stop! You're not the man. You just can't do it." But he does get close. He has that subtle. The intonations are there. You can tell that Jack Fox has listened to Paul Harvey at some point over the years. It's a good review, a good book, and well narrated. Again, that is Paul Harvey's America, The Life, Art, and Faith of a Man Who Transformed Radio and Inspired a Nation, DB72283.
I always liked how he did his commercials in the middle of things. All those commercials he did for Bose.
Sure. The authors claim he never did a commercial that he didn't first use the product and like it.
I would say that's probably true. I mean, he always sounded like he really knew what he was talking about when he did those commercials, and he really felt that way. Like you could tell that it wasn't just something he read that he was going along with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he seemed to believe deeply in what he talked about. I guess there are people who didn't like him. My folks were, I would call them Pat Moynihan or Scoop Jackson Democrats. Maybe in the 80s they would have been known as the Blue Dog Democrats. They were somewhat right of center, but they still saw the Republican Party as the party of the unfeeling, unthinking rich. And they saw the Democratic Party as the ones who looked out for the little guy, but they were somewhat right of center. But I think that they very much enjoyed listening to Paul Harvey, even though they may have voted for Democrats and so on. And I think he did capture both sides of the aisle a lot in his work. So
there was a book that somebody did, and I don't remember the title. It was a lot of his rest of the stories. You know, like he'd hear it 5 o'clock in the afternoon or something right. Like that. And back in high school, I was learning my technology in those days. VersaBraille and Opticon. You can see how old that technology is.
Loved an Opticon.
And for the teacher had me read that book on the Opticon.
Oh, my.
So
I bet that took forever.
It took a while, but I enjoyed the book. It was... You know, and he was interesting to listen to, you know, just even as a kid, he was interesting to listen to.
Oh, yeah.
I think the only book that I made it through on the Opticon, I think, was All creatures great and small.
That's great. I'm impressed. I managed an owner's manual for a 1984 Chevrolet Cavalier.
Oh, my.
How's that?
That's fall under 1-800-GET-A-LIFE.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I don't even disagree with that.
That's.
But I wanted the information. Valerie and I had just purchased this car in Chicago, brand new. We had, my goodness, we had two small children in those days. One could barely walk, and because she was that little. And yeah, it was just, I wanted the data out of that manual. I wanted to know everything I could know about that car. It was my first car purchased after I was married. And so, yeah, I read the entire owner's manual.
Now I take that statement back. I take it back.
No, it's okay. You're right. I desperately needed a life.
No, but I take it back. You had a purpose. And that was, you know, I used my Opticon with one of those lenses on it to read the computer screen and be able to type in and use my computer at Social Security before speech came along.
Yeah.
So I don't discount that. Don't discount that Opticon.
Oh, it was one of the greatest games. I still have mine. I just can't get the battery to charge. There's a guy out in California who repairs them, and I keep threatening to send it out to him, and haven't done that yet.
It was wonderful. I could read magazines. I could read things.
Yeah. When I lived in southern Utah, I took out a subscription to the Las Vegas Review Journal, and I would read my morning paper with the Opticon when I could get a chance to do that.
You know, we could read. It was what I call a game changer.
Yep.
That changed my whole career at work.
I agree. It's the best graphical user interface ever invented.
No, there's nothing to this day that it taught me the computer. I mean, I could just do what I needed to do, and that caller did not know.
That's amazing. You could find the spot on the screen. That
I could do it on the computer. He says, "What's that noise? I'm shaving."
It didn't sound a lot like that.
Yeah.
And the sad part, when I was in school, I was the only kid that was learning to use that thing. I'm surprised others didn't want to.
You're right. They should have taken advantage of that.
Yep. Kathy, right. Come on in.
Well, hi. I don't have any books to review, but I have read some this week. But I'm just totally enjoying this conversation, so I wanted to say hello.
Glad you're here.
Nolan, I've downloaded three books you suggested.
Oh, well, they'll be good.
I can do it fast enough. If I'm right on the get books, I can do it fast
right there.
Enough.
Yep.
Yeah, so I appreciate that. And good. Jenny, I have some of yours that I'm going to read. I read one yesterday that I'm just going to say was pornography.
I'm sorry to hear that.
3 hours long. If it were longer, I would have stopped.
That's awful.
You know. Well, it's okay. It's okay. You know. So I'm not even going to say the name.
Spiritual brain shower afterwards.
I did have that. Yeah, I had that last weekend.
Yes, we did. Yes. Yeah, you're right.
Anyway, so I'm trying to be, you know, more worthy and everything. But yeah, I'm just loving everything that that I hear here, and I just wanted to say howdy.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
And she was the only hand. So.
All right. So let me roll into this. I'm hesitant to do it only because it's not the first book in a series, and I hate to behave like an animal and talk about books in the middle of a series. A lot of people get resentful of that. But I want to talk to you real quickly about 61 Hours, a Reacher novel. This is Jack Reacher number 14 by Lee Child. The order number, if you're able to download from the National Library Service, is DB71403. Once again, DB71403. The BR number, if you prefer it in mail, is BR20391. Why am I bringing this 14th book in a series when I've not talked about any of the others? Well, I really enjoyed it, and it's a good prequel to another Reacher novel that's even better, in my opinion. So I can't talk about one without talking about the other a little bit. This is an interesting piece. Reacher, as you, those of you who read him, his story will know, is the guy who travels light. He prefers to buy new laundry rather than wash the old stuff. So every few days he'll trash it and go out to a store and buy new stuff. And he travels light and he requires very little. He's a bit of a nomad, as you know, sort of white knight nomad. And he tends to really believe in justice and trying to help the underdog. That's the best way I can think of to sum up this character. I started this on a Sunday afternoon late, and I could not put it down until I finished it. I just stayed with it. You don't have to read earlier books in the series to enjoy this one, but it helps if you read this, and then you're going to read the next one in this series. Anyway, he wants to be anywhere than where he is, and he's wandering around through South Dakota in the middle of winter. And he's pretty cold. He finally hitchhikes and is able to convince a luxury tour bus driver to take him on and let him have a seat in the bus for a while. Costs Reacher $30 to ride the bus, but he gets in. Once inside, they hit a bad snafu, a lot of ice on a bridge, and the bus skids, slides, does a terrible crasheroo, and is no longer able to move. The passengers are elderly. They are some of them have broken bones and are cut and bleeding as a result of the accident and so on. Reacher does what he can. He's had minimal medical training, but he does what he can with his army training. There are 61 hours from the time that accident happens until the amazing whiz-bang, oh-my-gosh ending of this book. And the author counts down those hours with you as you advance from chapter to chapter. And you hear that ticking clock going on in the background, and the suspense builds and builds and builds. It adds a lot to the suspense. The local cops are short-staffed, and so once the chief of police in the town finds out that the Reacher has some military police background, he asks him, Reacher, to protect an old woman who is a crucial witness in an upcoming trial against some drug dealers. Without her witness, the trial falls apart. There's no evidence. There's nothing. With her witness, they get to convict some really nasty people. He agrees, and a great friendship begins there. There's also an interesting building near the town that nobody knows who owns it. And Reacher uses some army connections to determine that, in fact, that's an Air Force-owned building. It hasn't been used since the Cold War. Nobody knows quite what's in there. If you read this, that mystery will be unfurled to you, and it will fascinate you. He calls his old army number, the one he used to have when he was in Washington, and this woman with this fascinating voice answers it, or eventually comes to the line. And over time, the two of them get, frankly, pretty emotionally close, even though all they're doing is phone calls, which can happen, I suppose. The friendship is useful because it will play into the next book in the series. That's only why I'm bringing it up here. This is a great story, well told. It's Lee Child's high performance standard of excellence. If you start it, you'll finish it. You're going to cheer for and weep with Reacher all the way to the back cover. I'm thoroughly convinced. Usually, Reacher has the advantage because he's always the big guy in the room. And this book flips that script a little bit. You need to read it to learn how. There's an interesting scene down in some tunnels that'll give you the claustrophobic creeps. Again, this is 61 hours. Jack Reacher number 14, DB71403.
Oh, what's the other one that you said was even better than that one?
I can get to that one next week, I think. It is even better. It's really good.
How does he support himself? Does he just live off his army pension?
Yep, that's essentially it. The old military pension and the occasional odd job, I suppose, here and there. But he doesn't have a house, he doesn't have a car, he doesn't have any kind of societal things that hold him in place. And so he just kind of wanders around the country.
I think in one of the early ones I read, he worked at a bar for a while or something.
Yeah, he's done some odd jobs over the years. I like these books. They're fast-paced thrillers. They're not thrillers, but fast-paced, hot action stuff. And if you like that kind of thing, you'll enjoy the way he kicks people's butts and forces them to be accountable. It's a lot of fun. I think being the fact that they've always been perennial bestsellers indicates that I'm not the only one who enjoys them.
It's a quite interesting book. He gets into all kinds of jams throughout that whole series.
That's right.
And some of them you think he's not going to survive.
You're right. That's the beauty of the writing.
He almost always gets the woman involved somehow.
He does. He's like James T. Kirk, you know. He's always got a woman in every port, every planet, in Reacher's case, in every town.
The last one I read, he ended up inheriting a house from one of his commanders or something, and the guy's daughter was there, and he ended up helping her.
This is interesting.
He is quite the character.
He is an amazing character, yeah.
And the author has done a good job of prolonging that series and keeping that series alive.
Yeah, it's not stale by any means.
You don't see many people with 14 books in a series.
Oh, yeah, and he's up in the 20s now. This is you're right. I think he's out there on Netflix as well, or one of the streaming services.
So, but what they do to books is another subject for another day.
They trash it, yeah.
What they do is a terrible situation with books. And
Sue Grafton was wise never to let her detective Kinsey Millhone go to Hollywood. She just would never allow her books to be optioned. So
she almost got it done.
Yeah, she got Z. So close, didn't she? It was so sad.
She had a way of, what is the name of that town, Santa Teresa?
Santa Teresa, yeah.
She had a way of describing that town like, oh, I think I'd like to go there and visit.
Right, I mean, you want to eat in that Hungarian woman's restaurant and
Rosie's, you want to eat there. It's kind of like a lot of authors like the Dismas Hardy books, how they can characters. Right. You want to go to San Francisco, and
indeed,
and those authors make you feel like there. It's kind of like the. Was it the gal that wrote all the books about Virgin River?
Oh, yeah, yep. Robin Clark.
Everybody wants to go to a town like Virgin River where everybody's helpful. In reality, you're lucky if your neighbors speak to you anymore.
Right. Yeah. So, do we have time for one more?
Let's see.
I've got
yes, we do.
Okay. We do have some hands up. Go ahead and take the hands.
Do we? Okay, Perry, who do we got?
We have Kathy. Yeah, let's say hi to Kathy.
Well, you've heard from me already, but I just couldn't
help
it.
That's okay.
James Kirk was not the only one that ever got the girl, because I remember one time Spock had something happen to him, and he was non-Vulcan-like, and he was jumping around and skipping and fell in love with this girl, but it didn't last long. But it was we love Star
That's
Trek.
True. There
I mean, my
the
husband,
exceptions. Yeah.
Yeah, there yeah. were, but you're right. James Kirk could always find the.
That's right.
Get
always
the lady,
got the girl. But, yep.
But I'll never forget Spock being.
Well, that's true. That one time,
being right, a normal man.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
That was a good series.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. So let me wrap my piece of this up.
The next generation. Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, thanks. With a real quick one, this is a somewhat controversial book. That's why I've saved it to the bitter end, so that we don't cause people to revolt and say they'll never come back. I don't know. That shouldn't happen. This is Death Dream, D-E-A-T-H Dream, by Ben Bova, B-O-V-A, science fiction author. The order number, if you can download books, is DB39835. Once again, DB39835. How do I tackle this quickly? The author is sending an important message here, I think. It's time. Here's the quick setup. You have a young family who has moved to Orlando, Florida from Dayton, Ohio. They were Air Force employees, civilian Air Force employees. And he took a job with a virtual reality company in Dayton. Now, the technology here is somewhat outdated. They talk a lot about CDs and that kind of thing, and telephone modems. So there's some outdating that goes on, but it's on balance. This is a great book with a sobering message. It'll keep you reading. The virtual reality company is trying to open something called Cyber World to compete with Disneyland, Disney World. In Cyber World, you'll be able to don a helmet and gloves and be able to be in the middle of baseball with your favorite baseball players of all time. Ty Cobb is there, Babe Ruth. All of them will play with you or against you as you wish in a game. You can walk on the moon. You can take a trip through the human body and even make changes to the brain and other parts of that body. It's virtual reality at its absolute best. The guy who runs the place is a guy named Kyle. He is a bit of a pedophile, unfortunately, and he uses his virtual reality equipment to get into the mind and heart of young 12-year-old Angela. She's the daughter of this young family who moved there from Ohio. This is a heart-stopping, amazing book. People say Bova was writing to defend pedophiliacs. That's absolutely false. There's no way that's true, but it created for me a sobering thought that if we are not careful, these evil people will use virtual reality when it becomes even more useful than it currently even is as a tool to groom the young and unsuspecting among us. And as grandparents, whatever we are, we're going to need to be extremely cognizant of the stuff that's out there and be able to be among those who are at the vanguard of those who defend our wonderful offspring against those kind of people. So it's a great story about a guy who, Dan Santorini is his name. He's the guy who moved there from Florida. It's his daughter who eventually gets groomed by this creepy president of the company for whom he's gone to work. And it's the story of how he essentially breaks the virtual reality system that the company has built so that he can rescue his little girl. And it's I won't say any more about it than that. It's a magnificently written book, very engrossing. There are scenes of pedophilia here where this guy works through the augmented or the virtual reality glasses to groom this little girl, and they'll make you sick. You'll be filled with a white hot anger and say things like, "Thank God that wasn't my kid. This guy would have been splayed out dead on somewhere." So, it's again called Death Dream by Ben Bova, DB39835. I have not done it any kind of justice at all. It's worth your time. It really is. That wraps me up.
Thank you very much. We'll see everybody next week. Same time, same station. Be sure to download the podcast coming later tonight or in the morning. Thank you, Perry. Thank you, everyone.